We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Next man up, 102.5 The Game, Jake Lyman and Parker Kelly alongside you, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Final hour on this Tuesday. We'll be joined in about 15 minutes by Jake Crane from On3, host of Crane and Cone. We'll get his thoughts on both the local college football teams, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, other storylines around the college football world. So excited to talk to Jake. But let's get into the World Cup here, Parker. Semifinals start today, France and Spain. And this is a big one for you and me. We have gotten to the very end of our pick'em with Connor. We each picked three teams at the beginning of the World Cup to see who could win. Each of us has one team left heading into the semifinals. And if you remember back, we refused to pick England. So this is kind of perfect. We picked all three semifinalists that we were willing to take. You have France, I have Spain. Winner moves on to the championship.
It's going to be a heated rivalry today, new rivalry. I don't think Spain and France are rivals, but I've actually been doing a little bit of research on this World Cup, and I was surprised to know that there are only eight countries ever to have won a World Cup. Five of them are in Europe, and France and Spain they've both won, I think, a couple each. England has won three.
No, they've won one.
Oh, they've won one. Yep. Okay. And Argentina's the one that has won three.
Yes. So all four teams left have at least won one World Cup.
Yeah. So I truly believe that we do have the four best teams. No Cinderellas in the semifinals.
Yeah.
But it is going to make for some exciting soccer.
Yeah, and I think we talk about Cinderellas with college basketball every year, and Cinderellas are fun. And I think we did have some teams throughout the tournament making runs. I mean, like Cape Verde, that's your 16 seed that was able to win their first round matchup and then took another team all the way to the brink. That was fun. Switzerland, even taking Argentina and it's funny, all of the Cinderellas played Argentina. Taking them to extra time, and then Argentina scored the two goals late to win. But you're right, we got the best teams here, and we got superstars up and down these teams with Kylian Mbappe today and Ousmane Dembele. You've got Lamine Yamal on the other side for Spain. So, and then of course the game tomorrow: Lionel Messi, Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham. Like it's going to be really fun semifinals. And then we set up for this weekend, third place game in Miami on Saturday, and then the World Cup final on Sunday in New York.
It is going to be awesome. It's a star-driven sport. I've really enjoyed watching Jude Bellingham because at 23 years old, what he's been able to do in the World Cup so far, scoring two goals in Mexico City versus Mexico, scoring two goals versus Norway, it's been phenomenal to watch. Do not like England. I don't like anything about them, but I like Jude Bellingham. And I think it'll be fun to see Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham go up against Messi in Argentina, and then today with Mbappe and Spain's – I don't know how to say his name.
Lamine Yamal. Yeah. I agree with you. I'm rooting against England. But England has endeared itself to me a little bit throughout this this World Cup. Again, I don't like rooting for England, but after the Mexico game – defeating Azteca, which is just a place that teams have gone to die over the past few decades against Mexico. Just no one wins in there when they play the Mexican national team, and they did it. And then the way they played against Norway, able to shut down Holland. And you're right, Jude Bellingham has been fun to watch, and seeing them sing Wonderwall and Hey Jude after the games. Like, it's been fun. It's been fun to watch England play. So I'm still rooting for Argentina, but I don't hate that England has made it this far.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm torn. I really wish both teams could lose because I officially did commit to the Ronaldo side of the Messi-Ronaldo debate. So I feel like I have to root against Messi, but I'm also not rooting for England. And I did pick France, so I guess I'm going France all the way out.
Yeah, I'm going with Spain. I think Spain has flown under the radar a little bit since that nil-nil draw to Cape Verde, and everybody's like, oh, wow, they were the favorites coming in, but obviously haven't been up to snuff early on. They've been good since the group stage. I think they win today against France. Do you know who's favored?
I believe it's France who's favored against Spain. And I believe England is actually favored versus Argentina.
Yeah, France.
But I think it's going to be a rematch of 22.
France, slight favorites today against Spain, and England, slight favorites against Argentina. So, yeah, you're right. We could get a rematch, France and Argentina, from the last World Cup final. 3569 makes a very good point. When we were talking about Cinderellas, we didn't mention Norway. They were 31st in the world. I guess having a guy like Erling Haaland just makes us kind of feel like they're not underdogs. But you're right. In terms of on the international stage, how they stack up against the other teams that made it to the quarterfinals, they were an underdog in that sense.
And so was Switzerland. And Switzerland actually took it to extra time, but Argentina scored two goals in extra time.
Yeah,
So
they beat Colombia too. Like, Switzerland was our true Cinderella, making it all the way to the quarterfinals.
They were.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Spain today. And maybe that's wishful thinking because I just want to win our, again, with absolutely nothing on the line except for bragging rights, I want to win that. Connor has Argentina up against England today to see if he can stay, or tomorrow, to see if he can stay alive. I do think that soccer is in a better place in America than it was a little over a month ago when the World Cup started. I think that the national attention has shifted and that we've all enjoyed watching soccer. Now, obviously, there are games when it ends 0-0 and there's not a whole lot of intrigue, and it's like, man, this is why we don't care about it as much over here. But there have also been some really, really entertaining games throughout this tournament that have been awesome. So I'm excited. The Nashville SC gets back in action on Friday against Atlanta here at Geodis Park. I am going to make it a priority. I don't know if I can go on Friday, but I'm making it a priority to get out to a game at Geodis Park. I've been here for almost 4 years now and still have not been to a Nashville SC game. And that's 100% on me. I need to go out there because I've heard they're so much fun. I haven't made it a priority. I'm doing it now because I've enjoyed watching this World Cup, and I want to support a team that is the best in the MLS at this point.
Great food, too, at Geodis.
I've heard that.
And that little section of fans that stand up the whole game and they chant and they shout, it is a great atmosphere.
No, that's what I've heard.
It's a great atmosphere.
I've heard that the fans are awesome. The food is good. The stadium in general is great. And now they've got a great team. That last year, obviously, they were very good, falling to Miami in the playoffs, who ended up winning the MLS Cup. And this year, you're the best team in the MLS at the midway point of the season. They deserve support. They deserve the casual fans like me to go out and support them. So I'm making it a priority. Maybe next week, actually. Because they play another home game, I want to say, coming up next week, maybe against Montreal. Yeah, next Wednesday against Montreal. I might have to get out there for a game because I am excited to cheer on this team, the best in the MLS, heading into the final couple months of the season.
It's going to be really, really fun because this team is supposedly one of the better teams in the MLS, might be the best team. Might be the best team in Nashville right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think pro sports-wise, 100% they're the best team in Nashville. You couldn't argue that against – and we're going to get text saying they play in a minor league. I get it. But, you know, pound for pound in the division that they're playing in, Nashville SC is the most successful team among the pro teams in Nashville right now. Although the Nashville Sounds have played well too. You know, if we're counting.
And the Nashville Sounds have the best farm organization.
You know, technically they play in Clarksville, but you know who the most successful pro team in Middle Tennessee is? It's the Nashville Cats.
The Nashville Cats. Big Joe would say, best ticket in town.
Yeah, I'm telling you, those games are fun. I was up there a few weeks ago. I think their playoffs start soon, actually.
Yeah, I feel like the championship last year was around this time.
I think the championship is in early August. Let's see. So they played the Firebirds back on Saturday. And I'm trying to find the standings. Let's see. They played the Firebirds and they won 57-54 on Saturday. So Nashville going to be the number one seed in the AF1 playoffs. So there you go. That's your most successful team in Middle Tennessee among the pro sports teams, if we're just taking them at their current division. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. World Cup coming up 2 o'clock today. And it is it 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock?
2 o'clock.
Two o'clock today. France and Spain, spot in the World Cup final is on the line down there at Jerry World in Texas. I am excited to watch that one. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we will be joined by Jake Crane from On3. He hosts the Crane and Cone Show. We're going to talk all things college football with Jake, including Tennessee and Vanderbilt as they prepare for the 2026 season. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5, The Game. Next man up, 102.5, The Game. Jake Lyman and Parker Kelly with you. Getting ready to talk some college football, and to help us do that, we go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We welcome in Jake Crane, host of Crane and Cone at On3. Jake, thanks for coming on, taking some time with us. How's it going this morning?
Oh, man, of course. Appreciate y'all having me. Going great. Got an 18-month-old wife due for with our second August 8th, so I'm just trying to batten down the hatches until then.
Yeah, congratulations. I'm sure you're going to be busy, especially heading into college football season.
Oh, yeah. Well, my wife, poor thing. I mean, she's got to play both ways. She's basically the Travis Hunter of wives this season.
I love it. I love it. Well, congratulations. We're glad to have you on the show today. Wanted to start with the local teams here, Jake. Let's start with Vanderbilt. Coming off the first 10-win season in program history, what are your expectations for Clark Lea and company as they begin a new era and try and build off the momentum that Diego Pavia left here on West End?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the expectations been raised, the standards been raised there, you know, getting Jared Curtis. And for a lot of people, again, you know, Vandy has become more popular, but I still don't think people really invest in Vandy and dive into what they have. Jared Curtis is the best prospect I think that has ever signed with Vanderbilt. And I'm not even talking about stars or any of that. I think he may be the most ready freshman to play. I think he's more ready than Bryce Underwood. I think he was more ready than Arch Manning coming out of high school. When you look at the physical tools, his overall natural passing ability. But the question for Vanderbilt to maintain the place that they've gotten to under Clark is, can you continue to get better at the line of scrimmage and build depth along the line of scrimmage? You know, there's a lot more wide receivers, DBs, running backs running around out there than there are offensive tackles and defensive ends that can play in the SEC. So really where I think Vandy has elevated themselves outside of, you know, Diego Pavia being the witch that he was on the line of scrimmage. They're not having to struggle uphill as much, which means you're not having to get as lucky or catch as many breaks or trying to fool people. And when you look at what Tim Beck does offensively, his ability to manufacture yards, especially in that 1 to 8 yard window, I think is one of the reasons that Vanderbilt has been able to maintain this success. And I think they're only going to get better up front the more success they have, therefore, you know, convincing the people that matter the most to invest in football. So I don't think they're going anywhere. Are they going to win 10 this year? I don't think so, but they are set up for the future to be an absolute problem in this league. And who knows where it could end in the era of NIL. I know there's a lot of rich Vandy grads, and you get them hyped enough about football, they'll throw you some coin.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong there. And you talk about Jared Curtis's readiness, and he hasn't been named the starting quarterback yet, but if he
didn't go to Vandy to sit the bench for a play, I promise you that. There's some backdoor handshakes that have been done.
It's not going to be Blaise Berlewitz.
Hey, I mean, until Clark Lea makes it official, he has not been named the starting quarterback yet. But
Can I just announce it for Clark on the show? Can I just go ahead and announce it?
Yeah, you're going to just, you know, get it out of the way here. But when it comes to his development, you talk about his readiness. What does the learning curve look like for him as he does get adjusted to playing in the SEC? A couple of tough road games early on against Auburn and Georgia.
Well, the best part is, I and again, you know, you've got to see the mental play out, because that's the biggest question. I mean, being mentally ready in high school is a lot different, even if you're above everybody else mentally, than being able to go through the grind that is a Division I, you know, schedule, especially in the Southeastern Conference. But the great part is, the physical part's done. There's not one thing this guy can't do at a high level, even as young as he is. So I would much rather have a guy that has all the physical ability, and he's going to go through some ups and downs, but I think the learning curve for him is going to be quicker, because I do trust the mental side of not only what he did in high school, but the way they develop quarterbacks there at Vanderbilt. And that system, I think, is very conducive to young guys, because there's a lot of outs. There's a lot of pre-snap stuff that goes on. But look, just like, you know, it's amazing. A lot of people just assume now that freshman quarterbacks are going to come in and ball, because it happened a couple times. That's the anomaly. The normal is, you're going to have ups and downs. This is you learning. This is you going in the Walmart parking lot at 11 at night and learning how to drive with your dad. That's what this is. But once you learn it, you learn it. And so what I'm interested to see is how he grows throughout the season, because to me, that is going to be the marker for what Vandy can possibly do for the next 2 years.
Jake, we're going to stay in the SEC here, because I saw that you guys over there at Crane and Cone ranked your top five SEC games, and I thought for sure that LSU and Ole Miss was going to be number one. It was actually number two, behind Texas and Texas A&M. So explain your reasoning behind that.
Yeah, and I think, and we said this on the show, we're dropping our Big Ten one today. It seemed like people really enjoyed the SEC one we did yesterday. To me, you can't just go and say, okay, who are the biggest brands and the best teams, and those will be the top five games. There's a lot more that goes into that, because schedules are different, right? Same thing we just went through with Penn State in the Big Ten. Their schedule's a lot different than what Oregon's going to have to play. So you have to put yourself in a situation where, hey, if we're going to talk about the games that are the most consequential, whether that be for the conference championship, the college football playoff, or the national championship, it's not as linear or as cut and dry. So while LSU and Ole Miss is going to be an incredible game in both situations, championship relevance, and obviously what's gone on with Lane Kiffin there, the hate in that game is going to be at an all-time high. I mean, they're punching each other at baseball games. I can only imagine what's going to happen at the football game. But number one for us was Texas and Texas A&M. And if you look back at the past two seasons, that game has been incredibly consequential. Texas has won both of them, but 1 year, Texas beats A&M, keeps them out of the SEC title game, keeps them out of the college football playoff. Last year, they beat A&M. Texas A&M still makes the college football playoff, and they're both returning a ton. Not only are they returning a ton, but it's the last game of the season, guys. Where it falls on the schedule matters too. So while, for example, LSU and Ole Miss, huge game. I'll give you another one. Georgia and Alabama, huge game, but it's not the last game. So to me, I think we got it about right, about as good as you could get it with the top five, because to be honest with you guys, we had five other honorable mentions that you could make a case should have been in the top five, maybe even in the top three. I can tell you, after doing it, the SEC is going to be an absolute traffic jam. I'm talking interstate traffic jam throughout the whole season.
Well, Jake, I ranked my top 10 games of the college football season last week, and it felt impossible because there were so many games that I left off the list that I'm like, you know, there's a case for to be made that this is a top 10 game in college football, one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do. I did want to ask, though, what is going to be worse for Lane Kiffin, going back to Oxford this year or when he returned to Knoxville in 2021?
I've got to think it's going to be going back to Ole Miss, because, you know, when he it's one thing to leave the way that Lane left Tennessee, right? And that was to go somewhere else outside of the conference. Now, it's still somewhat fresh. I mean, they're throwing mustard bottles and golf balls on the field. But this one is in the conference, and you left this team when they were going to the playoff. Like, you left to go get another girl the night you were supposed to propose. And you basically told Ole Miss, you're not good enough. And then after this, and it's not like you haven't put more fuel on the fire with what you said about what it's like recruiting in Oxford and this, that, and the other. This is as personal as it gets. It is as personal as it gets. And we know the level of rationale of SEC fans when it's that personal. They may have to call the National Guard in for this one. I mean, we haven't seen Mississippi State and Louisiana, or Mississippi and Louisiana, go through this since the Civil War.
Yeah, that game, no matter what happens on the field, it is going to be must-see TV.
Just can you imagine social media if Lane loses?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Banner night.
Jake, going to the other side of the state, we talk about Tennessee. This is a team with a lot of talent on it. Is the one big question just can whoever the quarterback is, McIntyre or Brandon, can they make a leap as a freshman and help this team? Because outside of that, this does look like a pretty complete roster that Josh Heupel has built over there in Knoxville.
Yeah, and look, I don't think Tennessee's getting enough credit for what's around the quarterback situation. But, again, we all know the importance of that position. The offensive line should be really good, which nothing helps a new quarterback out like a run game. It's the saving grace. It's the red button in the men in black car. You bring in Jim Knowles. I will say this. I don't think defensively they're going to be as good as what some people think they are. I think it takes a while for Knowles' system to work. You know, the Chaz Coleman situation is unfortunate. They do have talent. But I think this Tennessee team, 8-4 seems about right, because you're going to get some up and down. Here's what teams are going to do, all right? And listen, Heupel's offense, the wide choice, it's pretty good at combating this if you become one-dimensional, because you're able to supplement the run game with that quick passing game. But teams are going to load the box. That's what they're going to do. And if they can tackle in space on the outside, Tennessee's going to be in trouble. But I do think there is a world in which Tennessee's run game is so good, they're able to lighten that box up, balance that thing out, and the quarterback can become better throughout the season. It's just, you mix that with the tough schedule. I'll tell you this right now. I would rather be in Tennessee's situation from a new quarterback and offensive line than Alabama's situation, which is crazy to say, because they got a bunch of talent on the offensive line, but they haven't been able to gel together for about two seasons in a row. So it's a very interesting dynamic when you look at it. I'm not as bullish on Tennessee as some, but it's not like they're going to fall off a cliff.
So, Jake, I wanted to save this for the end, because you talked about, you know, your wife, or you guys are expecting a baby.
It wasn't me.
I'm also aware that there is a fall wedding within the family.
Oh, God.
How exactly are you going to go about handling that?
Yeah. Well, it's my brother who's a co-host on the show, obviously. And you know what? It wouldn't be so bad if he didn't rail against people for fall weddings for 3 years. I mean, this guy just walked across the aisle. I mean, he went from open borders to nobody gets across the border in 30 seconds. I will say this, though. I think we got a good plan, because we do instant reactions to games. So the rehearsal dinner, the way it's going to set up the house that we're at, is we're going to have all the boys there behind us when we do the instant reaction, which is going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be awesome or a complete disaster. But, hey, you know, we like living on the – we're basically a Nicolas Cage movie right now.
That is going to be incredible. I'm going to watch. I'm going to make sure to watch.
Oh, dude, I'm not worried about us. I'm worried about them being in.
Yeah,
the
like, that is a good point
out, like,
there.
Rules. Like, this is get hyped up, this, that, and the other. But, you know, we because it's a wild group now. It's a wild group. So
if it goes wrong, just blame Blaine for putting you guys in this situation.
Oh, 100%. He already knows. I mean, we just got back from the bachelor trip, and Operation Survive was a success. So I'm starting to feel better about it.
I love it. I will be locked in for that, to see the instant reaction live from the rehearsal dinner. I think that's great. Jake, thanks so much for taking some time with us this morning. We'll have to do it again soon.
Yeah, man. Appreciate y'all having me. And anytime, just hit me up.
Jake Crane from On3, host of Crane and Cone. Make sure you check him out at @JakeCrane_ on X. Appreciate him coming on. Some interesting stuff there on Tennessee and Vanderbilt. We'll get into it coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman and Parker Kelly with you. 30 more minutes left on the show. Big thanks to Jake Crane from On3 joining us in the last segment. He was fun. I mean, I'm excited for this wedding reaction to all the college football games.
I mean, first of all, we got to call out Blaine for this, because you can't be against fall weddings your whole life and then fall into the trap of having a fall wedding. There's no way around this. It's very hypocritical.
I stood firm. My wife did push for a fall wedding at times, but I told her, I said, it's not an issue for me. It's my wedding, so I would be fine missing football that day. And I'm sure this is the same way he feels. But for me, all of my friends and all of my family are diehard college football fans. Like, I'm not going to do that to them and make them choose whether. And again, everybody's like, well, they shouldn't care. It's just football. I would rather people be locked in enjoying their time rather than looking down at their phones and checking scores. It's just, I mean.
See, you went about this the right way. One, fall weddings are a sin. But two, you got to think about it. It's one of the most selfish things you can do is if you're planning a fall wedding, because you're not taking into account everybody else that'll be there.
It's not about me, right?
You want the focus on the bride, right?
Right.
The focus is not going to be on the bride when Alabama's playing Tennessee on the third Saturday of October.
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
And I think I had a little bit of an edge, because I could say, well, fall is like busy season for me, whether it's freelance broadcast or we're getting towards women's basketball season. I work with Vandy football. So it's like, I used work as the excuse, but I was able to avoid the fall wedding.
I was too. We got married in July, two summers ago. That's a great time to do it.
I did tell you I am officiating a wedding in October. So yeah. Do I mention that during the wedding? Although they're making us be here on a college football Saturday.
On a college
Saturday.
Football Saturday, which is crazy. There are three times you don't plan a wedding. Football season, the Masters, and March Madness. Any other time is free game.
Well, at least it's not November 7th, because that is the day we've established as the best day of college football.
Or October 10th.
Oh, it is October 10th.
Oh, well, no, there are a couple really good weekends, like A-plus weekends, and those are two of them.
Yeah, well, I will be Reverend Jacob Lyman one of those days. But I did want to get back to the note from Jake when we asked about Vanderbilt. And he says he thinks Jared Curtis is the most ready freshman quarterback he's seen in a long time. Said more ready than Bryce Underwood. So Bryce Underwood went 9-4 last year, had an up and down season with a Michigan team around him, right? The Michigan infrastructure, the Michigan talent is at a higher level than Vanderbilt's roster right now. But to say that, I think that is a very strong support of Jared Curtis heading into year one, that he is the most physically ready freshman quarterback he's seen in a long time. I think that should make Vandy fans feel pretty good about what this offense could look like with Jared Curtis at the helm.
I am in total agreement with him, and I've seen him up close in high school. Physically, he was doing things at an age that you should not be able to do at 17 years old. So I'm not worried about the physical aspect. I'm not worried about the arm strength, fitting balls into tight windows. I'm not worried about that stuff. But how much of a jump is it mentally for him? I do think he is, I'm not going to say a better situation than Bryce Underwood. I do think he's a little bit more talented than Bryce Underwood. And that's saying something, because Bryce Underwood is very talented.
Yeah, I mean, he got a lot of money to flip from LSU.
But I do think that he is, Jared Curtis is going to make the jump quicker than Bryce Underwood did.
Yeah,
and he still hasn't made his jump yet.
And we talk about Jared Curtis, the physical tools are evident. He is big, he is strong, he's got the arm arrogance that we've talked about in a very good way, that he believes he can make every single throw. He's got mobility. He's got the physical tools to go in and be good as a freshman. I won't say great, but he's gotten the physical tools to be good. And I think it's the mental side, like you said, right? Like, he's got to, first off, you've got to be able to run the offense efficiently. Diego Pavia had a whole lot of great assets as a quarterback, but the biggest one was that he always knew where the ball was supposed to go. He always made the right reads on the option plays. He always knew where the ball was supposed to go, and that's what made Vanderbilt so efficient. Jared Curtis is going to have to do that, and that's not an easy ask playing in the SEC as a freshman. And with Curtis, of course, you also have to keep your confidence high, because there are going to be road bumps, there are speed bumps, there's going to be potholes in the road that might kill your confidence as an 18-year-old, where you've been the best player on the field your entire life, And that's not going to be the case at times during his freshman season. You've got to be able to keep the confidence high. And that's just as much on Curtis as it is on the coaching staff of continuing to coach him up, but let him know how talented he is and that these things are going to happen to anybody as they get adjusted to the SEC.
I'm biased because I played the position, but also at the same time, I believe that I am 100% right in saying quarterback is the hardest position to play in all of sports. And there are going to be days where you think to yourself, I am the worst in the world at what I do. And there are going to be a lot of them. At some point, Jared Curtis is going to have a welcome to college moment. It happens to everybody. You can't let that dissuade you or distract you from what the main goal is. And being asked to start, and I know that Vanderbilt doesn't necessarily have the rich football history that a lot of other schools in the SEC have, but they had a really good year last year. And asking you to start day one as a true freshman at an SEC school is not an easy ask.
Right.
But he's probably going to be asked to do it. We all think that he is.
Right. I mean, I think we all feel like it's more likely than not that he is going to be the starter in week one against Austin Peay. Maybe not, but that's what everybody kind of expects to see. But I think he is ready for it, and the ramp up of the schedule is good that you get to see an FCS opponent, a Group of Five opponent, then you get a Power Conference opponent, and then you're into SEC play. There's a natural ramp up there. We've got some Vols here. One on the YouTube chat, Caleb, says Faison is better than Jared. Ricky says Brandon is better than Curtis. I get it. You're going to say that because it's on your team, but none of the recruiting services say that. Like
every single one of them had Jared higher.
Curtis Faison is a better prospect than Faison Brandon. Does that mean he's going to play better this year? I have no idea. We have to go see them play. I have not watched either of them play a real college football game quite yet. But if you're saying Faison Brandon is better than Jared Curtis, I think you're looking through some orange glasses if we're just talking about the recruit, the prospect that they are right now.
I wonder what gives these types of people that are saying that, not necessarily accusing anybody, but how would you know?
Well,
I mean, none
right.
of them have...
I mean, it's solely based on that he plays for Tennessee.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
We'll see what happens on the field. Faison Brandon is a very talented recruit. He's a five-star prospect, and I expect that he is going to be a good player. But if you're saying right now that you think Faison Brandon is better than Jared Curtis, you're doing that just based on your fandom.
What colors you're wearing on your chest right now.
Right, exactly. 4312 says UT fan here and Curtis is better. There you go. And again, we don't know what they're going to become. There's plenty of five-star prospects who don't live up to the hype. And there are plenty of five-star prospects who maybe were ranked a little bit lower and end up being elite. You never know until they actually start playing real games. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We will take your thoughts on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Last call for phones. We'll wrap up the show after this. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 the game. Next man up, 1025 the game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you, wrapping up the show on this Tuesday. Chase McCabe, Connor Newt, Chase and Big Joe show coming up after us at noon. Been a fun show today. Nick Suss was great talking Titans. If you missed that, we talked to him at 10 a.m. It'll be up on the podcast. Jake Crane from On3 joined us just about 30 minutes ago talking college football. Tomorrow, Corey Curtis going to be in with us for the full show from News 2.
Who knows where that's going to go?
Well, so I did text him that our plan in our quarterback book club is to watch the first two episodes tonight and come back and have a discussion about some of the things we hear about Cam Ward and the other quarterbacks. I would like
that
to say
that has a nice ring to it. Quarterback book club?
Quarterback book club.
Oh,
that's what we're going to call
that. That is the club I want to be a part of.
That's what we're going to call this over the next few days as we slowly watch it. I'll see if I can get TD involved too. I'm sure TD is going to be watching it. So we'll do our quarterback book club the rest of the week as we watch through the new season that includes Cam Ward. The first two episodes, we will be talking about it tomorrow. Corey says he's at least going to try and watch one. So you know, we'll see how.
I bet TD's already done with it by the time he gets here on Thursday.
Oh,
that would be my guess.
Yeah, I would guess so. So we'll have plenty of quarterback discussion the rest of the week, going through some of the behind the scenes looks we get from Cam Ward at quarterback. And I'm not going to be skipping through the Joe Flacco, Baker Mayfield, Jaden Daniels stuff. I have seen some people, it's like, all right, I just want to see the Cam Wards.
Nah, I'm not that guy either.
Right, I want to see Joe Flacco go through the midseason trade to the Bengals.
My guess is Joe Flacco is going to be similar to what we saw Kirk Cousins in season one.
Yeah.
Just on a smaller scale. Kirk Cousins was also in season two, wasn't he?
He was in two, yeah. He was in both of the seasons so far. It was
stud.
It was Mahomes, Cousins, Mariota the first season, and then it was Burrow, Cousins, and Goff the second one. So, yeah, Ward, Jaden Daniels, Baker Mayfield, Joe Flacco. We will talk some quarterback tomorrow with Corey Curtis starting at 9 a.m. Let's finish with this. We kind of breezed past this, but the NCAA's 5-5 eligibility model that they put forth a few weeks ago has gotten a lot of pushback in the courts. Last week, an Ohio judge granted 24 athletes their temporary restraining order or their injunction to play for a fifth year, including our old friend MJ Collins, who's going to play at Cincinnati this year. He gets a fifth year play. He played at Virginia Tech. He played at Vanderbilt. He played at Utah State. And now he is finishing his career at Cincinnati. And along with 23 other athletes who got that TRO. Now you've got 11 athletes taking a federal lawsuit against the NCAA to try and get their eligibility rules, which I believe if they were able to gain that that injunction, that would allow everybody who has a fifth year to play. I may not be correct on that, but that's similar to what we saw with Diego Pavia and his ruling with the junior college stuff. So this could be a very, very interesting few weeks as we gear up for the 2026 collegiate athletics year, that it's possible we could see some other, some new players entering the fold as they come back and gain an extra year of eligibility.
I think two things can be true at the same time. One, this 5-5, even if you're a traditionalist like me, is a fair compromise, because we were having people suing the courts left and right to try and gain 5, 6. I mean, Chandler Morris sued for a seventh year of eligibility. We saw Cam McCormick at Oregon and Miami played a total of 9 seasons. So there was always going to be pushback on this, and it shouldn't be a surprise that people are trying to get this back retroactively. Because if this is going to be a thing moving forward, I could understand, well, why can't I get a fifth year? The truth is, it is a fair compromise because it makes it very black and white and very little gray. So I'm a fan of the rule personally, but there was always going to be pushback.
Yeah, you have to draw the line somewhere. And I think it made sense for the NCAA to draw the line where they did. Say, if your eligibility has expired, you're not going to get another year. But everybody who still is eligible can take whichever model gives them the most benefit. They can choose. But you're right. There was always going to be some pushback from these athletes, because this group, the class of 2022 in high school that came into college in 2022, they got the short end of the stick, where they missed out on the extra COVID year that the athletes who were still in college in 2020 and 2021 got, but they're also not getting the extra year because of the 5-5 that everybody from the class of 2023 on is going to get. So it's one class that missed out on the front end and also missed out on the back end. So I do understand why these athletes are upset about this and they're going about it this way, but the NCAA had to draw the line somewhere. And with coaches and athletic departments planning their scholarships year by year by year, adding all of these players back in and forcing these coaches to make decisions, I just feel like it wasn't a good idea, and that's why the players are having to take this to the courts.
It was getting excessive, and I really don't see these lawsuits really stopping unless, one, the Protecting College Sports Act passes the Senate floor, which, by the way, it has a good shot of doing so, or we get collective bargaining in there, we get actual, you know, real contracts that have consequences if you happen to break those, or buyouts or whatever. But I'm excited to see if this Protecting College Sports thing, because it's due to be heard in the Senate floor pretty soon. So there's a good chance that we could get some news on that maybe before the month of August.
Well, right. Yeah, I think you'd want to have a solution one way or the other before competition begins. And athletic competition starts earlier than you would think in college sports. Like volleyball, I want to see when the first matches are for like volleyball and soccer, because it gets going like...
Yeah, they get going like...
Like early August.
Yeah, it's pretty soon.
So let's see.
Because, you know, along with football, it was always soccer, volleyball, the next teams to report.
Yeah.
And they were always like, you know, a couple, you know, for me, it was always, they were always a couple weeks after football.
Right.
Because football got there insanely early.
Yeah. Football's basically there year round.
Yep.
Except for what, February? But I mean, you got classes, so I don't know what you're supposed to do.
They have some time off, you know, like a couple weeks in between, right. June, like for 4th of July during the traditional dead period.
Right.
But if you're at a Division I school, specifically in the FBS Power Four, it's a year round thing.
Yeah. It looks like soccer and Vanderbilt start like exhibition games and matches in like second week of August. So we're within a month of the new athletic year starting. You've got to have some clarity on what this situation is going to look like. Are these players getting their eligibility back? Is there going to be some sort of resolution in the Senate? We're too late for collective bargaining. That's going to be probably months, years down the road. But
absolutely.
But congressional intervention, like we've talked about, I mean, it is going to hit the Senate floor, and there's a chance that something happens. So still a lot of balls in the air when it comes to just the landscape of college sports. And I don't think that's going to change for a while until we get some sort of concrete resolution one way or the other.
No, I don't know. I don't know when to expect that to. But the fact that the Protecting College Sports Act is at this point, it's further than any bill has ever been. Like, you know, the SCORE Act, the SAFE Act.
Yep.
Both of those were, you know, they tried to push those, but it never made it to the point of the Protecting College Sports Act. And the fact that it's a bipartisan bill is a big deal in itself, because
yeah,
that never happens.
Right.
So I do think it has a good chance of passing. And the interesting part about it is they need 75% agreement of all 138 schools in FBS. So if you and the SEC and Big Ten have already come out and said they're
right,
opposed to it, they don't need the SEC and Big Ten to
no,
be on
don't.
Board. And actually, there are coaches in the SEC and in the Big Ten who support it. It's just they're in the minority.
Yes, and that's a very good point. That 70. So you said 75 out of 138?
75. So if every school in the FBS is in support of this Protecting
right.
College Sports Act and every team in the SEC and Big Ten are not, the bill would still pass.
Yeah, that would still be 104.
But my guess is there will be a few schools in the SEC and Big Ten, respectively, that will be in support.
Yeah, that maybe cross the
picket
line.
That are not coming out publicly right now and saying they're
right.
against it.
Alabama and Auburn came out publicly against it, but yeah, you're right. There has been...
And both commissioners, Petitti and Sankey, have been against
there's
it.
There's been significant pushback from the SEC and the Big Ten about the Protect College Sports Act. So that's something to keep an eye on here as well. It's list season. It's courtroom season. I can't wait for it to just be football season again.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir here.
4312 says, the upcoming Senate hearing I can't wait for is the Always Daylight Savings Time Act. Come on, pass it. I agree. It's time to stop falling back.
Why Let's do we just, have to move the clock at all?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a good idea back when it started, but we don't need it anymore. We don't.
So
just keep it.
We've solved two of America's biggest issues, right?
Right.
Keep the time how it is now and no fall weddings. It will be good.
There we go.
I think all of our issues will be fixed.
Right.
If those two things
solving
happen.
Solving the nation's issues here on Next Man Up. We don't need daylight savings anymore. Arizona has it right. They just flip back and forth. They don't flip back and forth. They stay right where they are and let the entire country go one way or the other.
Man, we all need to copy Arizona.
Yeah. Be more like Arizona.
Let's be more like Arizona.
Yeah. That'll about wrap things up for us. Again, tomorrow, Corey Curtis is going to join us. Excited to have Corey on. We will react to quarterback. It is out. I have tried to avoid spoilers, Parker, but I've seen some things about quarterback. Again, spoilers probably isn't the right word, because it's like you already know all of this has happened. There's no new information that's coming about how Cam Ward played, but it's like, some of the stuff behind the scenes and the quotes that he has, I'm excited to see those live and in my own eyes. So we will be watching the first two episodes tonight. We will report back tomorrow. Corey Curtis joins us at 9 a.m. We will talk to you then. Coming up next, Chase and Big Joe with Chase McCabe and Connor Newt. Keep it right here on 102.5 The Game.